You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now: a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/givetech. Making law is hard to do. Just ask the EU. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. It is Friday, which means it's time for our Week in Review, Marketplace Tech Bites. On the show today, Epic Games won its antitrust lawsuit against Google this week, what it means for the players, and why the rest of big tech is watching. Plus, Netflix releases viewing data for its entire streaming catalog for the first time. Just what did we all watch? But first, it took 37 hours of marathon negotiations for the European Union to pass what's being called the world's most ambitious law regulating AI. Now the hard part, hashing out the details, a process that got underway this week. Axios Tech policy reporter Maria Curie joined me to talk about Europe's AI Act.
This is a really big deal. I mean, it's 450 million consumers in Europe that will eventually be impacted, and huge market for the biggest tech companies as well as smaller players. It's also important because once again, Europe is leading the way in global regulation. The U.S. likely won't do exactly what the EU does, but certainly people here are paying attention to how it all plays out in the EU to inform policymaking here.
What does the law require tech companies to do if they do, you know, want to move forward and operate in the EU?
So this deal, which was reached last Friday, does a few things. It categorizes AI rules based on risk. So minimal risk, limited, high, and unacceptable risk. And each category has its own set of rules. It also creates mechanisms for monitoring advances in the technology. It enforces transparencies. And so companies are going to have to disclose certain data and certain information about the products they're developing. And it also imposes financial penalties for non-compliance. So companies could pay up to 7% of global revenue if they don't comply with the different aspects of the law.
Yeah, and it looks like there is still quite a bit to hash out here. Officials have almost a dozen technical meetings scheduled over the next several months. What are some of the details left to work out?
So part of the reason why those 37 hours were so long and gruesome was because there were two major issues at play that were being debated by, you know, France, Germany, and Italy that wanted to water down parts of the bill.
Three of the biggest economies in the EU, we should mention.
That's right. That's right. And then Parliament, who was opposed to doing that. And the first issue is really the most contentious one. It has to do with facial recognition for policing and national security reasons. And what the conclusion they came to was that scraping faces or security footage from the internet to create a facial recognition database was not going to be allowed, but there are going to be exemptions. So for example, law enforcement can still use real-time recognition to combat things like trafficking, terrorist threats, to track down criminals more generally. But one of the things that still has to be hashed out in the implementation process is what legal basis these things are going to be implemented with. The second major issue that was up for debate and why lawmakers were up for 37 hours straight was this issue of foundation models. Just to back up a little bit, this act was first proposed more than 2 years ago. And the reason why there has been such a delay is because after it had been proposed, you had ChatGPT and chatbots come onto the scene, which of course work off of foundation models or large language models. And so this is one of the final sticking points that officials were debating, and you know, how to categorize these models that have such a huge potential for innovation. If they were to put them under the high risk category, they would have been subjected to very onerous, you know, reporting requirements, data disclosure, rigorous testing. So instead, they landed on categorizing it as a general purpose AI system, general in the sense that you could use a chatbot to come up with a cake recipe, or you could use it to, you know, spread disinformation. And from there, they decided how to actually impose rules on companies that are developing these models.
And we see a lot of this conversation framed around this notion of not wanting to stifle innovation. We saw those three countries that you mentioned kind of framing it in that way. We also see that framing here from people like Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. But it's more in the context of like a national security thing, right? Where it's like we need to compete in the U.S. with China on AI. We don't want to put too many guardrails around this, right?
That's right. And in addition to that, they don't want companies to innovate in other places, even in ally countries, like the countries that make up the EU. And so part of the reason why they don't want regulation that is too heavy-handed, both Republicans and Democrats, is because they want the innovation to continue happening in the US and want to remain globally competitive in that sense as well. And so you, even though a lot of the details still need to be hashed out, you see a lot of lawmakers here already saying we're probably not going to go as far as the EU.
Yeah. And last thing quickly, if we could, your colleague Ryan Heath has been writing around how there is a catch to this. The law that the EU just passed doesn't take effect until 2025. Mm-hmm. So there's basically this ask, can you know, of the tech companies to voluntarily comply. How do you think that's going to go?
You know, I don't think that they are going to play ball that easily. I mean, to a certain degree, they are eventually going to have to deal with this, and starting to figure out how they're going to comply is probably a good business practice. But if it's going to mean not innovating or releasing new products, I don't think that they're going to have a much of an appetite for that.
We'll be right back with more of Marketplace Tech Bites Week in Review with Axios reporter Maria Curie. You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now: a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/givetech.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. We're back with reporter Maria Curie of Axios. We're going to move now to our second story, Epic Games winning its antitrust lawsuit against Google. A federal jury in San Francisco on Monday deciding unanimously that Google's Play Store violated antitrust laws. Maria, let's go back to the beginning, to 2020, when Epic tweaked the Fortnite app so that users could pay Epic directly instead of going through Apple and Google's payment sharing systems. Epic is then removed from the app stores for both companies. What should we take away from what the jury decided here?
I think one of the things that we need to take away is that once again, the action is happening in the courts, not on Capitol Hill. And even though the effects of this, the real world effects of this, won't be seen for a long time because Google has decided to appeal the case, and that could delay this by years. Ultimately, if Epic is successful, it could mean that consumers are having more options for apps and could be paying lower prices. And that is because that 30% cut that Google takes from hosting these apps would no longer be a factor.
And to your point about that appeals process, which, yes, could exactly take years. There's no doubt about that. Their argument is that they compete fiercely with Apple's App Store and others on Android devices and gaming consoles. So we're going to be watching this wend its way through the courts. Wired called this the first significant U.S. courtroom loss for big tech in years. What does the verdict in Epic's case against Google mean for other big tech companies? Are they worried right now?
Well, even though Epic lost a similar case against Apple, I think the fact that it won this against Google could be promising for the smaller developers and a warning sign for the bigger companies. And the Apple case that they lost is Epic is asking for it to be taken up by the Supreme Court. So that is not a resolved matter either. And we're also seeing Google face a different court challenge brought by the Justice Department here in Washington, D.C., based on potential monopoly powers over its search engine. And so even though Congress continues to lag behind and not really move on this issue, I think companies are on alert because of all of the action that could happen in the courts.
Yeah, a lot happening with Google and these competition actions on various fronts. More to come there. So we're going to move to our third and final story, Netflix releasing viewing data for its entire streaming catalog. The company on Wednesday posting new data on every show and movie on the platform for the first time. So we had the weekly top 10, Maria. We had the most popular lists. Now we're going to be getting a whole lot more on a somewhat regular basis. It looks like every 6 months or so. What stood out to you as you were looking through this first batch of what Netflix is calling what we watched, this new report?
What stood out to me was that The Crown was not listed,
Same. Which
is very surprising. And I actually didn't recognize a lot of those titles, so I don't know what I'm doing with my life.
I think you might be actually doing work is the answer to that.
Okay, I'll take it. 100 billion hours of content watched a year. That's a lot. But I think it's going to really help the writers, the producers, the actors who fought for this transparency in the Hollywood strikes to, kind of show the impact of their work and hopefully get more compensation.
Yeah, this was a huge ask in the strikes brought by writers and actors earlier this year. And Bloomberg Lucas Shaw made this point, and I think it's really important. There was a time when creatives were actually just fine not having a lot of data. It sort of took some of the pressure off. You know, if you had a bad ratings week, that could kill your show once upon a time. But I was really struck hearing Netflix's co-CEO Ted Sarandos talking about how over time, it's clear to him that this lack of transparency has really created trust issues with the creative mm-hmm. community.
Yeah, he said it created distrust with producers, creators, and the press. At the same time, he didn't attribute the disclosure of this data to the strike directly. But I think, being able to have metrics around this stuff does help people and workers when they're bargaining in many different settings. And this shows that, Hollywood is no different. But it is true that, popularity doesn't always mean quality, especially in the arts. And so it is an interesting point that using numbers now is something new and different.
Yeah. We do have to tick off a couple of names here. So The Crown, not on the list, to my dismay and yours, it sounds like.
Yes.
The political thriller The Night Agent was the most watched title in the world on Netflix for the first half of this year, followed by Ginny and Georgia season 2 and the debut of the South Korean series The Glory. I have watched exactly 0 hours of any of those shows.
Me either. But now I have weekend plans, I guess.
But can we just dwell for one moment on this? The Night Agent generated 812.1, I love the point one, million hours of viewing. Just that one show. That is amazing to me.
Yeah, that's absolutely wild. But people clearly love to Netflix and chill and decompress that way. And that's also very relatable.
That was Maria Curie at Axios. You can find the full video of this episode of Marketplace Tech Bytes Week in Review on our YouTube channel, Marketplace APM, and subscribe if you haven't already to watch us every Friday. Rosie Hughes produced this episode. Jesus Alvarado and Daniel Shin also produce our show. Gary O'Keefe and Becca Weinman are our engineers. Izzy Palacios is our senior producer. Kelly Silvera is our executive producer. I'm Lily Jamali, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.